This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Welcome back, and thank you for tuning in and listening to Free Talk Live. We are a nationally syndicated talk radio program where you can call in, talk about, well, whatever we're talking about, or if something else is on your mind, bring that up. It doesn't matter. We're happy to change the subject.
And this is the live Saturday broadcast.
It is.
So if you're hearing this live on a Saturday night, likelihood is this is a good time to call in.
If it's between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern time, you do the math for your own time zone. We operate on the Eastern time zone because, well, we're in that zone.
Sort of. Live from New Hampshire, it's Saturday night!
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very true. So 603.
I'm from New York anyway.
603-283-6160 is the phone number that you might want to tattoo on your firstborn's forehead backwards so you can read it in the mirror.
Okay. So they can read it in the mirror.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Could, if they were in a mirror and you walked in behind, you could read it too. Everybody can read it if they're looking in the mirror.
Yeah, but if it's on...
That's
it's
not
on
your, needlessly circuitous at all.
If you decide to chuck your toddler out of the truck as you're driving down the road, and they stand up behind you like, WTF, you can read the phone number on their forehead in your rearview mirror.
Haven't we changed this, like, a couple of times?
What?
The phone number?
Uh-huh.
Once upon a time, there was a toll-free number.
Right.
And that changed
so
when...
So if they tattooed that on their firstborn child's forehead... It would be useless now.
Well, okay, but there are...
And
you know,
it'd be like most tattoos.
There are
embarrassing.
There are tattoo removal techniques, you know, where you can either get it over-tattooed, right? That is where some artist comes up with a way to make whatever lines exist there into a form of art and otherwise tattoo over it using whatever you tattooed in the first place as the basis for their art. Or there are actual, like, laser removal techniques where you can, like, have a laser applied to the ink, to the lines that are the tattoo.
So you're suggesting they tattoo our new number over the old number on their firstborn forehead.
Here's the thing. If it's coming to tattoos, make sure you control the destination. Because apparently, like, amongst the Utes, it's now, like, a thing to get your Spotify playlist tattooed on you somewhere is that someone can scan it and get
it.
Yeah, it's a thing. I don't know why it's a thing.
For funerary preparations?
It won't even work, right? And before people were getting like YouTube links and QR codes to YouTube's tattoos, you want to get like the Rickroll thing?
Yeah.
But then YouTube changes, right? So if you're going to do that, if you're going to tattoo anything on you like that,
control the destination.
Yeah. Like, make sure you own the domain. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you created the QR code or whatever scan that points to your domain.
It'd be hilarious if your QR code you got tattooed was supposed to Rickroll you.
Yeah.
But then it turns out to be like something completely, different. You know, the destination.
Which will happen eventually. So if you're going to do this dumb stuff, right, control the destination and make sure you always control that destination. Then it won't matter, because if you control the destination, you can redirect it wherever you want.
I have plenty to say about tattoos, but before we go on with the show, this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed for spending. Are you tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? I am!
Yes.
Me too!
You can live your life on Dash instead with some very handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. What about paying your bills? Well, Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account, just in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and it's also available in multi-crypto wallets. It's very easy to get and very easy to use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. And big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air here at Free Talk Live. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That's Dash.org. I use Dash recently to buy a gift certificate to like an Amazon thing.
Nice.
And, man, lightning fast. Just like, bam, 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 done. Right? Whereas if you use like Bitcoin, you got to wait. You got to wait for confirmations. You got to wait for an email. You got to wait for another email, right? You know, and then, you know, maybe a half hour, maybe an hour goes by, and that's at like an uncongested time. You know, if Bitcoin is on the rise and the network is clogged up, you might be waiting for a day or longer, but...
And heaven help you if they just came out with ordinals.
Right. But, man, Dash was just like, bam, done. Like, I got the confirmation before I got the origin email. Right, so they usually send you one that's like, we've detected your transaction. Please wait for this next email.
Okay.
But, like, I got the confirmation. Yep, your deal is done. Here's the code, and, you know, here's all the gift card numbers that you need to send to whomever.
So fast it gets there before you sent it.
And then I got the email that was like, your transaction has been detected. So, like, it was that fast.
Each may have a purpose.
Yeah.
Dash is different from Bitcoin.
It is.
Insofar as the purpose.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Bitcoin is the foundation of a monetary system, and Dash is a payment system.
This is why I think, Richie Rich, you might be closer to like a BTC Maxi than I am.
I will be the resident BTC Maxi on this show.
Okay.
For a long time.
I'm not necessarily a BTC Maxi. Let's see. How do I want to say this? If you look at my crypto portfolio, like if that's even a thing, I skew to BTC because they're the OG. I got into it first, et cetera, and so on. But I have made use of and become fans of other cryptocurrencies as well because as a free market-minded individual, I like competition, right? Sure. So, like, I'll use Dash for certain things. Right, I'll use Monero for certain things. I'll use other privacy coins for certain things. I'll mine certain coins for certain things. I'll spend certain coins for certain things, but not others. But it all depends on what is my situation today? What is the market like today? You know, what can I get? How can, you know, what do I need for this transaction? And fortunately for me, like, I'm, I guess, tech aware enough to use these competing coins for whatever their niche is.
That's fine. And I am the resident BTC Maxi, but the caveat is I have acquired other coins, mostly through payments from Free Talk Live.
That you then turned into Bitcoin, right?
No, because I'm lazy.
Like I see.
That's the thing. I just don't bother.
You're a lazy Maxi.
Yeah.
Hey, laziness paid off for me today.
I don't even look at my paycheck from work. I don't even check the bank. Like, I check my bank once a month to make sure that I can pay, like, the bill at the end. And if there's enough money in there to pay the bill, like, I'm gold.
You don't even check that, like, the right amount has been deposited?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
You are a rebel living on
I'm lazy. I'm lazy. It's like, it's an extra step, and I don't want to do it. So, like, Free Talk Live sends me my stipend.
Sure.
Right. In
your gas money.
Right. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just presume it's in there because I have given the appropriate person my wallet address.
Sure, yeah.
But I've never really checked it. Occasionally, I open it up and I go, okay, there's stuff there. It must be coming in.
Yep.
But I don't bother doing the conversion. So, in my life, I've bought BTC and BTC, with the exception of, like, one purchase, I bought Bitcoin Cash. And that was because I had to spend some of that Bitcoin Cash when I was doing the Montana license plate things.
Oh, yes.
So I spent like $800 in Bitcoin Cash, and then I replenished that just to replenish it.
Sure.
And then I've never purchased anything other than Bitcoin.
There's some, like, I have.
Seems to me this whole, like, the animus between Bitcoin maximalists and not Bitcoin maximalists, like the big blockers and the small blockers, and how much they hate each other is absolutely insane.
Okay.
So, for one thing, Bitcoin Cash actually works better when it's not huge. Okay. Like, it is possible that the small blockers were right, and that if it had been the biggie, that we would have such a big blockchain that no one could actually run the thing because it just had too much data for you to store all of that for a node.
Right.
Could be right, but for sure we know that when it's not the biggie, it works. So sure. Something like Bitcoin Cash or Dash are in that payments niche.
Right.
So the fact that these guys are at each other's throats makes absolutely no sense to me. Like, number one, you're not getting rid of each other.
Yep.
Like, it will never happen. The small blockers, you will never get rid of BTC. The big blockers, you will never get rid of any of the S coins. Like, there will always be other coins. The fact that mining occurs means that there will always be an incentive to mine something else.
Mm-hmm.
And since you can't mine payments effectively on layer one for Bitcoin, you can, however, mine something that's a little bit, that's like that enough that you can actually use it for payments. I mean, to my mind, like that's your layer two. It's just not happening the way you expected.
Yeah, and when it comes to payments, right, I follow Gresham's law, and I spend bad money. So I get rid of all the fiat that I can when I'm making purchases, right, and I buy as much Bitcoin as I can, and then I don't spend it. I haven't had the need to spend it yet.
Yeah.
Right. In an emergency situation, like, oh my gosh, I need this money ASAP, but I got to liquidate.
Yeah.
You know, fine, I have it, and it's likely going to be more than I paid for it because of how long I've been able to hold.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm not at anybody's throat. I don't really care.
Yeah, it's perfect for that. That whole like savings digital gold thing.
Yeah.
Like, I know for a fact it's going to be number one for the foreseeable future. BTC will be the number one coin for the foreseeable future,
right,
and probably forever, maybe.
Maybe forever, but the foreseeable future means if you think it's going to be number one,
right,
that's what you ought to be in most.
Right. Well, it's what you ought to be saving in most.
Sure.
But if what you're using it for is payments,
yeah,
then you probably ought to have at least the ability to move your savings into your payments. And certainly, I enjoy having some Dash for payments.
Sure.
Although, again, like right now, I'm spending the bad money
and keeping
the good money. And Dash, while it may not be as good of money as Bitcoin for savings, it's way better than the dollar.
Which is why I haven't converted any of my Dash to Bitcoin, but I also haven't converted any dollars to Dash. So what I have to spend in Dash is what I've been paid in it for services rendered, gas money,
right?
And then I liquidate as much dollars as I can comfortably.
I am very light on USD, and I have been for, maybe 2 years now, like to where there's only a couple of things I need USD for, and so I make sure I have enough for that.
Yeah.
And then I'm heavy on crypto. And then I've got, some gold backs and, some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But I find zero reason to hold on to USD. That is the dollar.
Yeah.
Because it keeps going down in value.
Well, and no one does. No one holds on to USD. What most people do is they put all of their value in their mortgage.
Right.
Like they pay their mortgage. They use their dollars to pay off their mortgage. And that's where they put all of the value that they are accumulating.
Yeah.
Right. And there's, for a lot of people, that's most of their income.
Yeah.
These days, right?
Yeah.
If you bought any time in the last couple of years, you're sort of like, you're looking at more than 30% of your income for your mortgage or your rent. If you're renting, it's even half, right?
Yeah. But I drive a vehicle, right, that occasionally has problems.
Yep.
So I spent USD on a backup vehicle to get me around when my main vehicle's like in the shop.
Smart.
Right, but I also have enough dollars, to be able to be liquid if I need to pay off a big repair bill again.
Sure.
Right, I don't want to have to, like, dip into my Bitcoin and find a way to convert that
while
my car is, like, in the shop.
I'm of the same mind, but before I purchased my house, I had to, because the only thing you really need a high credit score for in the United States of America is to purchase property, and that's your first purchase. Once you have property and you have some equity in that, you can just leverage the equity to purchase your second property. You don't need a high credit score. You need a we'll call it a good credit score. You can't have bad credit to do that, but you don't need to be in like the 700s or whatever, right? So I did a thing where I built my credit up and I got myself a credit card.
Yep.
And so that is my version of what you're talking about. I don't have an actual stack of dollars,
yep.
right? Should I need a vehicle repair or an emergency home repair, you know, like my sewer pipe burst and I had to get that repaired.
Or
like,
as a landlord,
as a landlord, tenant expenses. Right, tenant expense, something like that. But what I do have is a credit card, and that's my plan for those kinds of things because yes. Either I'm going to earn enough USD to pay that off, or I can borrow against my crypto holdings in USD, or at least in a stable coin, which will then convert.
Well, you still got to pay off the credit card.
I still have to pay it off, yes. But like I essentially buy myself time to figure out what to do instead of sitting on a block of USD, because I don't know how horribly that USD is going to devalue between now and the time I need it.
So
I sit on a line of credit just because I have it, and I'm like, well, that it's high enough that I'm like, that should suffice for just about any of these like emergency type things.
Yeah.
And if the S really hits the fan, I of course now have some equity in the house. I've been paying on it for a few years, and like you know, the market has gone bananas, and so I have equity. So if I, you know, I don't know if the foundation, you know, needs work or something like that, like I can take out a home equity loan against I'll push my mortgage a few more years or something like that in order to do so. But I have the ability to do it rather than sitting on the continually devaluing USD.
Okay. Well,
go ahead. There is one situation where I would say that, because generally I completely agree that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Make sure that you've got the credit for any kind of surprise expense. And really, like, that's what credit cards are supposed to be for.
Right.
And there is one
exception. I'm probably old school.
Yeah, and there is one exception, I'd say, for holding on to dollars that I wouldn't suggest you do for credit. I mean, not yet anyway.
What's that?
And that is buying the dip.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because these things are volatile. I still think...
You can only buy so many dips, and then you run out of dollars.
Right, exactly. So if you hold on to a little bit of what they call dry powder, so that when there is a flash crash, you can get in while the getting is good.
And then it dips again.
We have
that's a matter of knowing what part of the four-year cycle you're in.
we could talk more, but we have some callers holding. Let's go to David in San Francisco. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I've been a fan of alternative currencies for, I don't know, 25 years.
Nice.
Ralph Nader and Howard Zinn were both pushing the Ithaca dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It should be
Ithaca hour.
Ithaca dollar. Yeah, in Ithaca, New York, the Ithaca dollar was, 30, 40 years.
Okay, I thought it was the Ithaca hour because it was a time-based currency.
It is. You're both right. It's just that the one Ithaca dollar was supposedly worth 1 hour of somebody's labor.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be. I've never actually used it. I just saw copies of them. They had paper copies, if I remember right. And, you know, if you think about it, all the way back in history, your reputation used to precede you.
Yep.
If you were an honest broker, if you were a good shoemaker, if you were a good carpenter, if you did good work, if you were a lazy SOB, your reputation preceded you, and your ability to produce a good quality product, you know, for other people was to their advantage as well as to yours.
Yep.
And what became difficult was when you got into currency speculators. And I got a little skeptical with the cryptocurrencies because it was not just currency speculators, but it was imaginary currency speculators. There was no paper value to it. It wasn't based on anything other than someone's pronouncement. But what made it even more difficult, out here in San Francisco, I work on energy issues. And if I understand right, the original cryptocurrencies, whether it was Bitcoin or some of the others, they gave a copy of your transaction to everybody else that was on a network so that everyone else was able to see what you could buy with it and what transactions happened, and that became the honesty of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when it got so big, the fact that you had to email a copy of every transaction to everybody, whether it was a cup of coffee or a yacht, the amount of electricity that it was taking just to do one transaction was like how much a person spent of electricity for an entire day in a house was the amount of electricity it came to prove that a single transaction happened. And that got into whether or not electricity was being bought. And as I understand it, power plants in China were, I think they had 6 coal-fired power plants in China that were dedicated solely to cryptocurrencies, and they were polluting the hell out of China just to be able to prove that you bought a cup of coffee. And it was preposterous when you think about the electricity used in America is not transferred over to America. It's the dirtiness of it stays there, and we get to see it over here. So there got to be a sort of a phoniness about the actual transaction. And
what do you mean a phoniness? Yeah, like I can see why you would say that it was an undesirable transaction because of the pollution, and I would like to talk to you about that. But what do you mean a phoniness?
Well, that it didn't really reflect a transaction. If you walk down to this, the corner and got a cup of coffee from somebody, there's no reason in the world why 10,000 or 100,000 people need to know about it. And whether or not, and that was only based upon keeping a currency, the cryptocurrency honest.
Okay. The honesty part of it. I mean, the reason that everyone had to have a copy of this transaction was because that was the way to get away from a central issuer on the thing.
But I want to clear something up real quick. If you go down to, the corner coffee shop and you use something like Bitcoin to buy a cup of coffee, the Bitcoin transaction is recorded on a public ledger. However, there is no link directly between the store that you purchased it. Like, there's not a copy of your receipt that says David from San Francisco just bought a Venti Mochaccino or whatever at Starbucks. There's no record of that on the blockchain. There's just the record of, oh, this wallet spent, $8 or whatever it is at Starbucks. Not even at Starbucks. $8 from here to here.
If I don't know that wallet's yours, then I don't know who spent that $8.
Right. It's pseudonymous in that respect, that there's no tie to you. Unless somebody knows your wallet address specifically, there's no tie. David, do you want to hold on? Because I feel like we have more to talk about. Thanks. All right, stand by. 603-283-6160. We'll talk about this cryptocurrency thing and how a public ledger is a benefit, but yet does provide a level of security. Coming up here on Free Talk Live, we've got more on the way. 603-283-6160.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
U.S. a news update. A woman on methamphetamines tried to open the emergency door on a plane 10 hours into a Korean Air flight. The flight was over the Pacific when the 26-year-old woman, high on the stimulant, became paranoid and agitated, ran to the emergency exit door and tried to force it open. Passengers say flight attendants wrestled her to the floor and restrained her. Airport police took her into custody when the plane landed safely several hours later. Cops reportedly had her tested and determined she was high on methamphetamine. It's apparently the third time this year that a passenger has tried to open an emergency door on a Korean flight. A project manager, Tavis Rogers, fired by Newmont Mining Corporation for missing a COVID-19 vaccination deadline, has filed a lawsuit alleging religious discrimination. Rogers, employed for 7 months, raised concerns about the vaccination requirement issued in November 2021. He sought permission to work remotely instead of getting vaccinated, but the lawsuit claims the company did not accommodate his request, leading to his termination. Skip Kelly, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live. It is the Saturday night edition.
Or Dree Talk Live if you can't spell.
I remember. I wonder how many people, you know, go to freetalklive.com and misspell it, right? One E or like freetalklive.com, TLC, right? You know, somebody fat fingers it. It's like, is that a talcum powder site? Oh, I've never seen one of those.
Free Talc Live.
Yeah, something like that.
It's usually one of the keys next to the key.
At any rate, it is Free Talk Live. Our website is freetalklive.com. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join us, is 603-283-6160. We were talking with David in San Francisco, and we'll get back to him momentarily, about cryptocurrency and specifically electricity and its use within cryptocurrency. But in the studio tonight, it's myself, the captain.
Pickles Mountain Mayor.
And Richie Rich.
Before we go on, we are asking all of you Free Talk Live listeners for a favor. As you may already know, Ian Freeman, the show's founder, and Aria DiMazzo, one of the first chair co-hosts of this program, are both serving time for transacting with people voluntarily with their permission, explicit consent and permission. But the government didn't like that because no one filled out a permission slip.
Another reason why LaPlante is malicious and not adept.
Right. So we are asking you for a favor. I'm going to post to all of our social media sites, our Twitter, our Mastodon, etc. and so on. I'm going to post a link where you can find information on how to write to these people. We're just asking you to, you know, say, hey, we're thinking of you, or, hey, I heard something else, or maybe you heard something that you think might help the case. Maybe you heard something that you would like to be featured on the show. Maybe you just want to say hello, give an update on your life and how things are going, or say thank you for putting a show like Free Talk Live on air, because despite the fact that they are in prison, this show goes on. And we do that because we believe in the message of freedom. And we are unique in this space. There are zero other radio shows that I'm aware of. There are zero other talk radio programs syndicated nationally that not only allow folks to call in and talk about whatever's on their mind, but do it multiple nights a week and have been doing so for over 20 years.
Yep.
So,
spreading this particular message.
Right. So, at any rate, let's bring David back on the line. David, are you with us?
Oh, sure I am.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's tough to hear imprisonment. Ian has always been kind of a sneering attitude toward me, but it is tough to hear he's in prison, so give him my best.
Will do. So I know you and Peekless were discussing electricity and how it revolves around cryptocurrency, Bitcoin specifically, and I think Peekless had another point to make.
Yeah, the first thing I wanted to say about the electricity usage is, so it's not that it costs this huge amount of electricity for one transaction. It costs a bunch of electricity for a whole bunch of transactions. So all of those get packed together in one block. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suppose, but there are a couple of confusing things about it. When I heard the explanation about there's an anonymity to the account, you know, that a transaction happened for $8 for a Vente or whatever, that kind of breaks apart the security of it, doesn't it? If it's an anonymous transaction, then how is anybody able to balance their books? And it's that the other thing I was going to get into in this, you know, after the after World War II, the currency speculators had made a mess of the world during World War I. They had dragged World War I on and on and on just by doing pump and dump with the economy. You know, praising a country, praising it until its currency rose, and then cursing it so that it would fall. And so pumping and dumping of whole currencies ruined the economies, not only of those countries, but it also tore apart the psyches of the various people that lived there. And they,
yeah. So don't speculate on S-coins.
I'll take your word for it. But
well, and the other part that I want to just point out to our listeners, David, is that you're talking about government-based currencies, not what cryptocurrency is, which is a non-government currency, right? So,
well, but they still pump and dump.
They do, yes. Okay. But I just want to make it clear that when you're talking about the history of these currencies, you're talking about government currencies, which are sponsored by a state, right, a.k.a. a government, whereas cryptocurrency, Bitcoin specifically, is the first currency that I'm aware of that exists without permission of the state, right? Like, the state can't shut it down, and that's what gives it value.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the first currency to exist, but in the modern era, sure.
Okay.
It's certainly the first digital currency to exist without government, intervention, I'd say, but permission.
Yep.
Yeah, out here in California, and specifically down in Silicon Valley, I was given the impression that Bitcoin and some of the others were started by inventors, Silicon Valley inventors, who were having trouble getting the Wall Street to invest in their projects. And so they invented a cryptocurrency so they could at least get fans to invest in their
project. The author of the white paper for Bitcoin is unknown.
Yeah, also, it's pretty explicit what he created it for, a peer-to-peer currency. A peer-to-peer digital currency is what it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be a way of getting funded. Now, after it took off, it got used for that, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
And basically this whole last cycle was a lot like the dot-com bubble, was a tremendous number of companies issuing cryptocurrencies so that they could get their pet projects invested in.
Right, but they always had to create their own because you couldn't do it with Bitcoin.
Right, and you still can't do it with Bitcoin.
Well, the idea of actually Silicon Valley Bank, if I understand right, had decided to encourage or include Bitcoin in some of those cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. and then I don't want to get too.
Oh yeah, I think that's why they got targeted for the takedown. Right. I think the reason that banks got targeted was because they had that one, and especially Signature Bank, were big in the crypto space.
Right. Well, when I opened up, I was talking about your reputation used to be your means of exchange.
Right, which works if you have few enough people. But if you have enough people working together, and really that's literally the only way for peace. So the only way that two different tribes can stop killing each other is if they're trading. So in order to get the effects of a reputation system across A, more people than you can keep in your head, and B, people that are in disparate areas, was to have some kind of currency. But it does very much solve the same problem as a reputation system.
But now we have social credit scores that replaced it.
David, just a final thought here. If you can imagine cryptocurrency being used, and you can also imagine reputation becoming, say, more in vogue than it is now, if you marry those two together, I believe you have something far more powerful than anything any state can put together. And thank you for the call tonight. We appreciate it.
I'll interject one last thing before you move on with regards to the electricity. The electricity usage is built into the price. And it's my money paying for the electricity, and you ought not care what I do with my money and my electricity.
Well, and for that matter, at this point, the majority of the energy being used to mine cryptocurrency is renewable, just because that happens to be where there tends to be an excess of electricity. Like, you get a lot of solar power, for example, when people don't need it.
And the final thing I'll say about this is... does cryptocurrency use electricity?
Yes.
Do state-based central banks and central banking cartels around the world use electricity?
Yep.
Guess who uses way more than the other two exist?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not cryptocurrency. It's the central bank apparatus and all of the crap that they have to make their system go. Far more electricity.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about pollution, I mean, the thing that honestly backs the U.S. dollar is the U.S. military.
It does, yes.
And sure, that includes the fact that the U.S. military is making sure you have access to oil and all of that, but basically it's the military doing it, and they are the largest polluter in the world.
Yeah, the U.S. military, largest polluter
by far,
on planet Earth by orders of magnitude.
Right. So if you want to even come close to scratching the surface of of even parity... of pollution for a monetary system, then you have to become the new largest polluter on Earth, and crypto is nowhere near that.
Let's move right along. Let's go to, I believe this is Crichton in Kentucky. Crichton, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, guys. I called for a completely different reason, but before I can even get into that one, I have to ask, because it came up while I was on... your guys were talking about Bitcoin.
Use a sock.
You mentioned that Dash functions great as a transfer system.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how does Dash compare to, say, Bitcoin Lightning? Because I use Bitcoin Lightning, and it seems to work nearly instantaneously as well.
I have yet to use Lightning Network for any transactions, so because of that, I'm going to refrain from an opinion on that, because I can only speak really about what I've used, and I've used Dash. I have used Bitcoin, but when I use it, Generally speaking, I'm not using Bitcoin for like an instant purchase for like a cup of coffee or something like that, right? I'm moving, you know, a larger amount of that than I would Dash, right? I'm not moving 10 bucks, right? I'm moving
The Lightning Network, right? There's an element of trust to it because that happens, quote unquote, off chain. And then eventually gets on to the main chain.
Right. My understanding of how Lightning Network works is if I wanted to buy a cup of coffee, I go to the local coffee shop. They're like, yeah, it's going to be $8. And I go, okay. I scan my QR. That goes into the Lightning Network. And it just sort of stays there for a minute. And I get my coffee. And they go, yep, it's cool. And then later on, when, you know, traffic is low and the fees are low and all that, the Lightning Network then resolves that transaction to the Bitcoin.
It's like batch processing credit cards later in the day.
Right.
That's kind of a misunderstanding of how it functions.
All right. Well, go ahead.
The Lightning Network is based on the idea of payment channels on the Bitcoin blockchain, except that the Lightning Network makes massive network of pre-existing channels, and it finds a path that can work between yourself and the person you're transacting with. As long as both of you already have an existing Bitcoin Lightning account, you have a path somewhere.
Okay.
And so what it's doing, it's resolving any number of existing payment channels to make that connection possible. And that's actually where the delay is. It might take up to a whole minute, but I haven't seen longer than that for it to find the path. But, yeah, it's not credit. Well, I guess in a way it is credit because somebody puts the Bitcoin on the network to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the payment channels work is that they go through somebody. So I'm trusting this person that I know. I've got a payment channel with them. I'm trusting this other person that I know. I got a payment channel with them. And the Lightning Network finds those connections and may actually go through you. And there you get a little bit of just a salting of Satoshis in the process. If it chooses you as a pathway, but other than that, it's significantly cheaper than.
I'd say it's not credit or trust because the as I understand it, the way that the program is set up, like number one, this only can do certain things,
mm-hmm.
and number two, you can always pull out at any moment. So like if I receive some sats from Lightning. I sell you some coffee or whatever. Now I can leave that as it is, and I guess it is kind of like the captain was saying that value just sort of stays on the Lightning Network for a while. Or if at any point I'm like, you know what, I'm done here. I can just push a button, and all of the things that are attached to me go onto the chain immediately.
Yes. That is possible. That's in fact how it works.
Yeah, and to my mind, that's not a credit or a trust. But I appreciate the Dash system because of the fact that it still has an openly viewable blockchain, and it has the chain locks technology that makes it faster. At least right now, than what the Lightning Network does.
Okay. Well, I actually called for a completely different topic. Well,
let's segue into that.
All right.
Because I wanted to talk to you guys, because I believe that you guys are probably the most cerebral of the hosts, the regular hosts, and might understand this concept better than most.
He's talking about you,
Kevin.
I don't think so.
I'm talking about the current and past conflict between Israel and Palestine, or more accurately, the people living in Gaza. And I've looked at this completely differently than most people I've encountered.
Okay.
And I consider it largely unresolvable for the following reason. We have two groups of people who have a strong religious history, and in both cases, they believe, legitimately believe in their history, that God gave them this land, and they don't deny that they conquered it to get it. They have the exact same situation.
Yep.
And if you look at most of the people who have an opinion, I mean, some people just honestly don't have an opinion on this, but very, very few people, that's true. But if you actually talk to people who have an opinion one way on either side of the other, they believe that one side is legitimate in their claim.
Yep.
And the other must not be.
Yeah.
And they always have that. So I believe this is irresolvable because it's the same property.
Yep.
The Gaza, I mean, in Gaza, Hamas claims the entire property of Israel.
Yep.
This is where they get the claim from the river to the sea, the mm-hmm. whole thing. So the two-state solution was always impossible for them. From the Israeli side, they claim the same thing.
Yeah.
But at given times, the problem is that not that the majority of people that are religious can see a compromise and say, okay, this is not that important. There's always this minority on both sides that is truly fanatical about this issue, that this is our land, God gave it us. So, and occasionally, forever and ever and into the future, that minority, that hardcore land-owning minority is going to gain control of the government. And right now, over the past 20 or 30 years, Hamas is that hardcore.
So what happens if I adopt a religion, right? Or I create one.
Just create one. Right? Everybody else in the studio.
I just create a new religion, and I go, you know what?
Aren't you a reverend?
I am. Okay. In my religion, I was awoken by my knowledge. Shining.
I have never intentionally created a religion.
You're just the Pope of somebody else's.
I am the Pope of someone else's.
I'm trying to make a point here. I create this new religion. I'm awoken by a shining bright light, and I interpret this as God, as my deity, saying, "I bequeath you the entirety of Israel."
Yeah,
and I go, "Oh, okay." And then a bunch of people join my religion.
You're gonna have to go get it by conquest.
And then we go over there and we go, "Hey, yeah, God said it's our land," instead of God saying it's your land or God saying it's the other people's land.
Well, conquest is really the thing. Ah, so that's the thing.
That's the question.
Well, there are two ways of solving any and all, disputes in general and mm-hmm. property disputes in particular. So
peacefully and violently.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So since they believe, no, God gave this to me, or what? Ever your justification is, it doesn't matter how thick or how thin it is. Could just be, that's mine because I want it.
I
believe that all things that I want should be mine.
I don't even care about the religious aspect. Right? The way the narrative is laid out, right, is the occupying force mm-hmm. will always refer to the resistance as terrorists.
Right.
Yeah.
And right now, the occupying force is Israel. And why is the occupying force Israel? Well, because we have maps going back that show at one point it was all Palestinian land, and then the British came in and said, like, nah, Israel, you can have it, and then defended it through violence. Well,
okay.
Israel came in and conquered.
Yes. Yes.
You missed the important conquered part.
Yeah, go ahead, Crichton.
You've just demonstrated my exact point. You have demonstrated that you have qualified that one side is correct. You have named the most recent conqueror as being the authority.
No, yes. No. Conquering does not convey a right to anything. It tells you who has it.
I agree with you.
But it doesn't give you a right to it. You can do plenty of things that aren't right.
Rights are a fiction.
They're not.
You got to get past that.
Rights are a method of not being at each other's throats all the time.
It's still
so like if the Palestinians and the Israelis wanted peace, what they would have to do, the only way that it would ever happen, is if they started to acknowledge property rights in the basic way of, who altered nature first and then gave it to someone or sold it to someone?
Crichton?
But that's my point. That's why this is an unsolvable problem.
Yes.
Because at a core level, there is always some portion of both populations that legitimately believe that this is their land from their ancestors because God gave it to them.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't even need to be from their ancestors. There's enough evidence out there, or stories, or what you know, one-off outlier events, right, where the Israelis showed up, physically removed Palestinians from houses that they were currently living in, mm-hmm. and then let Israelis move into that physical house that already exists. Like, that's an occupying force.
One thing I know...
But you misunderstand my point. I'm not talking about recent history. I'm not even talking about the century.
I already gave you your point that conquest dictates it. Unlike Peakless, I don't care about rights. Rights are a fiction, right? It's yours because people agree it's yours or because you can defend it. That's it.
Well, no, it's actually simpler than that. The people agreeing that it's yours contributes to your ability to defend it.
It does. It absolutely does. But if there's a dispute, which there is, you have to be able to defend it. Right, and the Palestinians have been unsuccessful in their defense.
That depends,
and that's why they're now considered the terrorists.
If there's a dispute, and we're going to solve it through violence, as opposed to if there's a dispute, and we're going to solve it through communication.
And per Crichton's scenario, you're not going to solve this one through communication
because there's always going to be that core of people who will not allow it to be solved through communication.
Well, and because they both think they have a legitimate claim in their own minds. From what it was at sea, from the land to the sea, or the river to the sea,
yeah,
right. Like they believe that in their hearts. That's the fundamental start. You can't bring it's. You know, I don't want to bring it up again, but it's the whole abortion thing. It's incommensurable differences.
Yeah. Right.
You will never agree to a fundamental starting point of which to build a conversation on. Well, it will always be violent.
I think that they can, but it's going to take governments to stop interfering for them to finally come to some sort of a resolution that is acceptable to both sides. And until governments get out of the way, get out of the way, there is no possible. Crichton, thank you for the call. We appreciate you.
The only question left is how much this conquest idea of property is going, and this continual warfare is going to expand, and whether or not it will engulf the planet in fiery death.
Either to the death or put one side on a reservation like they did with the Indians.
603-283-6160. Still to come, the New Year's nightmare. What is the IRS planning? We'll get into that plus more. It's Free Talk Live. Hour number 3 is next.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast?
We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.